Hello, everybody, and welcome to Blood Club, where we talk about Blood Club. We just don't keep it a secret. Today's edition, I have the opportunity and privilege to have Dr. Herrera from the City of Hope talking to us today. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you, Matt. It's really a pleasure to be here.
There's so many things that we could talk about right now that are going on kind of in the world of hematologic malignancies. But I think one of the things that I want to focus on today is thinking about frontline Hodgkin's lymphoma. You know, we had 20 plus years of ABVD, and then, you know, along came the Echelon 1 trial, kind of one of those trials where I could remember where I was when I first saw it at ASH, sitting next to Steve Ansell when we saw the modified PFS advantage. And then, you know, lo and behold, 6 years later, somebody taps you on the shoulder and go, oh, you know, by the way, you know, there's a survival advantage now with BVAVD or brentuximab vedotin missing our friendly bleomycin here. But really, I think what kind of shook the frontline space recently is the SWOG 1826 data. And I know that you, that's near a dear, that trial to your heart. And while we're starting to see some glimpses of the early data, I think what a lot of us, including myself, want to help understand is how did that trial come to kind of its inception in your world, and walk us through that?
It's actually a really fantastic story. You know, after the Echelon 1 study, brentuximab BVD starts to get used. There was kind of much debate about whether it should be used or in whom it should be used. And through that time, you know, we see the initial data from pembrolizumab and nivolumab in relapsed refractory disease. It's kind of becomes this poster child of like how PD-1 blockade really can change how we treat cancer. It's kind of Hodgkin's lymphoma is genetically predisposed to respond to these drugs. And then we start, you know, kind of marching them forward in the treatment paradigm. You know, we start to include them in the salvage therapy. And there's a study, a cohort of the pivotal phase 2 study in relapsed refractory disease that actually studies nivolumab in combination with ABT in the frontline setting in advanced stage disease. And the data are promising and the regimen looks safe. And as you know, there were all these other studies, you know, whether it be sequential or concurrent kind of PD-1 blockade combined with chemotherapy. This is back in 2017, 2018, where, you know, we basically saw that very initial data of nivolumab. People who are near and dear to both of our hearts, who were very visionary at that time, in particular, I'm thinking about Jonathan Friedberg, saw that there was an opportunity as the cooperative groups were starting to change, as we were collaborating, as we were starting to get more studies in lymphoma, you know, through approval in the NCTN, and we were all kind of working together to make sure the studies got done, which, you know, for many years, the studies were slow to get started. It took a long time to get done, and so much so that we started to worry about the relevance by the time they were completed. Right in that time where things were starting to change in the NCTN, I think Jonathan and others had this idea that, you know, maybe it was time for a new advanced stage study in Hodgkin lymphoma. You know, the last time we had done one was the SWOG SO816 study looking at PET-adapted AD. And so clear opportunity was to study PD-1 blockade in the frontline setting. The question was, well, you know, what are we going to compare it to? But to Jonathan's credit, you know, he ropes me in at this point and said, you know, we want to think about doing a study here. He reached out to our pediatric colleagues. Pediatric Hodgkin lymphoma and adult Hodgkin lymphoma have been treated differently for decades now. They have not had access to novel agents as quickly as we had. And so he said, well, would you be interested in collaborating on a study together through Children's Oncology Group and the adult? You know, Pierre Kelly was leading the Hodgkin lymphoma group in COD at the time. So that was an important step. Thankfully, they were interested.
Where were we with Echelon 1? And where was the pediatric randomized trial with brentuximab vedotin plus, you know, kind of seven drugs?
Echelon gets presented at ASH. This is now, you know, kind of early, you know, kind of late 2017, early 2018. They have planned their AHOD 1331 study, which incorporates BV into their backbone regimen. I think it was on its way towards completing the accrue really quick, but it hadn't been completed. So
they had kind of dipped their toe into the water with brentuximab vedotin already. Because I think one of the interesting parts about SWOG 1826 was you had that trial, you know, now you're going in with a novel, you know, regimen, which really was it had met its primary endpoint, but, you know, right, the eligibility in Echelon 1 was 18 and older. So how was the discussion about bringing an adult regimen backwards? In ALL, we have good examples of where we've taken, you know, AYA, you know, our childhood regimens and brought them forward to adults. This is different. We went in some ways backwards from adult to pediatrics. How did that discussion go?
So at the time, it was really primarily between the investigators and with CTEP, you know, the NCI. There was a consideration of whether to make the trial registrational back then and kind of to engage with the FDA. Ultimately, that didn't happen. So it was really kind of more about the investigators. And the pediatricians, you know, I don't want to speak for them, but at the time, my impression of their feeling was, one, there was this desire to harmonize for this disease, and that was an important, you know, kind of goal. Two was the access to PD-1 blockade in the frontline setting. Echelon-1 happened accrued and reported, you know, and I think at that point is when they were going to be able to get access to BV and to conduct a trial with BV. So part of it was kind of gaining access to the novel agents. I think the other part of it is that ultimately ABD as a chemotherapy backbone is less intense than ABV-PC. So I think there wasn't so much of a safety concern with the chemotherapy kind of shift in backbone. With nivolumab, for sure, there was a lot of consideration of the safety, right? These aren't drugs that are well studied in the pediatric.
When you talk about, you know, fertility, obviously there's longstanding fertility data in the COG, you know, regimens. There was fertility data with BV-ABD and longstanding with ABVD. You know, and here we were kind of introducing a checkpoint inhibitor, right, into that discussion. So how did that kind of flow?
Since there hasn't been a real signal for any obvious negative impacts on fertility, there was a point that people felt relatively comfortable with the idea that we were going to study this. And the perception, at least, was that it shouldn't have a majorly negative impact on fertility. So I think that one was okay. There was more consideration of, well, are we going to see a lot more immune toxicity in these younger patients? Rarer things like cardiac toxicity and things like that, myocarditis, all those things, are we going to see that in younger patients? Is the profile going to be different? Thankfully, we didn't see all that in the end. So there was a lot of discussion between the pediatric and adult folks, you know, including myself, who were leading the study. And then the decision was made to convene an NCI planning meeting for the trial to arrive at consensus about the regimen, the endpoints, between all the different cooperative groups, the pediatric children's oncology group, all the adult cooperative groups, CTEP, you know, BMS, everybody kind of at the table to think this through. And that ended up being really important because at the end of the day, you know, we designed a study that we arrived to a consensus on. Consensus is never easy. In a group of lymphoma docs, you ask 10 lymphoma doctors for an opinion and you probably get 10 different answers. Everybody agreed that the study design to compare nivolumab ABD compared to rituximab ABD, you know, one-to-one simple randomization. It was efficient. It was the valid question. Nobody could argue that BV-ABD didn't have the best progression-free survival for it, kind of an ABVD-ABD-based backbone at the time. So all those things were, I think, really, really helpful to bring everybody to the table, get engagement from all of the different players, the cooperative group participants, have a consensus about it so that once the study opened, you know, accrual went faster than, you know, anybody anticipated.
How ahead of schedule did accrual occur?
The anticipated accrual for the study was 4 years based on SO816, for example, what the at its peak. And we ended up finishing in 3 years and a few months, 3 years and 2 or 3 months. So almost a year ahead of schedule.
My understanding of the data was about 25% were between the ages of 12 and 18, correct?
That's right. 25% of the patients were under 18. 10% of the patients were older.
Older is greater than 60, right?
Exactly. So SO816, because it included BICOP, excluded the older patients. Those two things absolutely helped accrual. And I think this idea that, you know, when we built this trial, we designed this trial, it was really important to us that all the stakeholders felt like they were engaged and invested and kind of owned the study too, right? So, you know, ECOG, Alliance, Children's Oncology Group, all the different groups that are participating, and the Canadian, you know, cooperative group, CCTG. The idea was, you know, each one of those would plan to lead a subset analysis or at least a correlative analysis, right? So, you know, the Children's Oncology Group was really involved in the patient-reported outcomes. ECOG Akron was going to be really involved with the imaging. Obviously, we would have pediatric and older patient subset analysis. So all of that, I think, establishing that from the beginning, that this is everybody's study and everybody's going to have a part of that.
So there was good harmony going into the study. And I think accrual obviously showed that. You know, I think one of the big efforts also was making sure that a diverse, you know, clinical trial subject population was at least given the opportunity to accrue to the study. Do you think that you met that goal as part of the study?
In the end, S1826 was a representative study. You know, over a quarter of patients were, you know, Black or Hispanic. I'd say that is a testament to a couple of different things. One is that the Children's Oncology Group historically actually does a great job because there's such a participatory group anywhere around the country where, you know, you're treating pediatric cancer. Often these patients are enrolled on conc trials. That was a big part of it, actually. The other part of it is that this trial, because of its simplicity in design, because it was a pretty straightforward study, you know, we're going to same chemotherapy back on one drug or the other, it enrolled particularly well in the NCI NCORP sites, our community kind of partner sites. There was a huge amount of enrollment. And so that also, I think, played a huge role in achieving diversity and a representative trial that we can look at and say, you know, this is representative of our North American population.
So in our last couple of minutes here, you know, I'm going to get to the efficacy outcome or the primary endpoint, you know, because it was also, you know, one of those places where I remember where I was when I got the investigator letter. I think I texted you because I was about ready to hop on stage to talk about Hodgkin's lymphoma. And, you know, I was shocked a little bit with regards to the readout. And I was not necessarily shocked by the experimental arm. I think it kind of lived where I thought it would live. The control arm was where, or the BVABD was where I was a little surprised. You know, I know that there's a one-year PFS and it's a fairly early time point, especially when you're kind of thinking about, well, you know, how long did Echelon 1 take the readout from that standpoint? I know we'll continue to see the data mature. Can you kind of give us kind of what that maturity, you know, timeline looks like? Are there further data cuts coming?
So when the study met its primary endpoint and nivolumab ABD was significantly better than rituximab vedotin ABD as it was, this was determined at an interim analysis at the 50% of total events, planned total events time point. That became the primary analysis, right? But we still had already baked in that we were going to do interim analyses, planned interim analysis cuts at 75%, and then, of course, the planned, you know, kind of full analysis.
Essentially, nobody knows. It's kind of one of those, when the events occur, then you get a little email saying, the turkey timer has dung again.
These are pre-planned time points. And I think that was purposeful to make sure that we were not just, you know, kind of cutting the data just to present at conferences and things like that.
Some of us are kind of like wondering, like, oh, is there going to be a presentation in that regard? We'll see it when we see it. And in some ways, we hope that there isn't further events, right?
We anticipate that early in 2024, this is a purely event-driven, but we would expect, at least based on the initial estimates of when the events were occurring for the 50% analysis, we should see something this year. And we are eager to share that, you know, with the field, and it's important for patients and making sure patients get access, because this was so early. The follow-up was short. It was 1 year median follow-up. And with the disease of Hodgkin lymphoma, where the intent is to cure patients, you want to see longer follow-up. We have opted to wait for that next pre-planned analysis time point and data cut to put the data out there and really ensure that you're giving patients and investigators, treating doctors, that longer follow-up time to make the right, you know, decisions for their patients. So hopefully early in this year, we'll see those follow-up data. In the meantime, we do have that ASH. We have a subset analysis of the younger patients and of the older patients, which are actually, you know, quite interesting results. The benefit with nivolumab ABD is consistent across some groups, but, you know, there are some particularities of toxicity and things like that are different among the age groups, which is really interesting. Again, we will have correlative studies. We're performing circulating tumor DNA analyses. We're performing imaging correlatives.
A lot of squeeze from this grape. Great trials, you know, create great vintages because they don't waste any fruit. With that, this is what you get on Blood Club, everybody. You get the backstory, you know, to these monumental, I think, potentially paradigm shifting, you know, trials done by great investigators like Dr. Herrera and colleagues. But as he alluded to, this was a very much a Harmony trial done with great people, great patients, great subjects, great families. And with that, we'll conclude this episode of Blood Club. Thank you very much again, Alex, for your time.